You know, tomorrow will mark 14 days since Pentecost. We are told to count 50 days from the day after the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread to determine Pentecost. And we've talked about that with the run-up to Pentecost. God uses time throughout his plan of salvation to keep us grounded and on track. He uses time, but he transcends time because he created time. He inhabits eternity, and he sees the end from the beginning. We, on the other hand, live within the very tight confines of time. And clearly this was God's intent from the beginning. Our Father and the Word created a very finite existence within their eternal reality to move their plan ahead of building their family. And it is very reassuring to know that God is the master planner and that he will guide his plan through to fruition. You know, our lives are made up of a very finite amount of time. I think everyone in this room is aware of that. And as British novelist Robert Harris wrote, the true currency of life is time, not money. And we've all got a limited stock of that. So if time may be looked upon as the currency of life, why do we spend our time in ways in which we would never consider spending our money? And speaking of time, if any of this message sounds familiar, you can hearken back to October 26, 2019, because the core of this message was delivered from this lectern on October 26, 2019. This afternoon, we're going to look at a few reasons why we may not always be the best stewards of our time, why this is important, and what we might want to consider doing to improve the use of our available time. Throughout his word, God emphasizes the importance of correctly valuing time. If you would, please turn to Psalm 90. Psalm 90. Psalm 90 and verse 12. So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days. Keep track of the time that we're given. The Life Application Study Bible says the following. Realizing that life is short helps us use the little time we have more wisely and for eternal good. In other words, our short human existences should force us to consider our ways and think. We need to think. Please turn to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5. In verse 15, here we have the Apostle Paul writing, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." Redeeming the time, making use of that time, holding on, taking hold of that time. Once again, the Life Application Study Bible comments. By referring to these days as evil, Paul was communicating his sense of urgency because of evil's pervasiveness. We need the same sense of urgency because our days are also difficult. We must keep our standards high, act wisely, and do good whenever we can. In other words, redeeming the time can be looked upon as being careful with our time, wisely using the very limited time that we have in Satan's evil, twisted world. So this brings us to reasons why we might not always be the best stewards of our time. The first reason is just life in general, and life, more specifically, in Satan's world. Because of our rebellious human nature, life would be tough, and how we choose to use our time would be a challenge, even without Satan's influence. So we have our own internal agendas, our own drives, even without being bombarded by the prince of the power of the air's broadcast. Things would be tough even without that. Satan and our own fallen natures are very effective at keeping us distracted. The bottom line, Satan wants to destroy us. We should all know that. We all know that. But sometimes, and I'm speaking for myself, Satan's influence loses its significance as the source of so much dysfunction, pain, and suffering. You know, Mr. Crow gave a sermon a while back about lying and, you know, the pervasiveness of lying. And, you know, the subject has come up on numerous occasions, in the political sphere, just everywhere. All of this tends to cause distraction because I think subconsciously we tend to want to get to the bottom in our minds of what actually is going on. And if you're bombarded with lies and deception, you're trying to figure this out, and it's a distraction. The father of lies, the prince of the power of the air, also wants to keep us distracted, and he does this by turning up the volume on our human tendency toward lust. Just do it. If it feels good, it can't be bad, can it? It won't take that much time, will it? I'll watch that television program for only a few minutes. I'll do that for only, a half an hour. Well, the few minutes turns into more than a few minutes, and that half hour turns into more than a half hour. He, Satan, knows we have limited time. He knows that very well because he knows his time as the God of this age is limited as well. We might be slammed by Satan's garbage morning, noon, and night, but in some ways, the cares of this world often involve just living life, and the choices that we make and how we choose to spend our very limited time are critical. If you would please turn to Luke 10, Gospel of Luke, Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 38. And I'll be reading from the New International Version, Luke 10, beginning in verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." So, you know, this is a really interesting dynamic. It's been discussed many, 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 many times. But it's not that Mary was doing anything wrong, intrinsically wrong. She was performing what's expected, you know, hospitality. But there was an overriding issue of importance. The very guest that she was trying to make comfortable and provide for was more important than the important aspect of the hospitality. The Life Application Study Bible comments, "Mary and Martha both loved Jesus. On this occasion, they were both serving him. But Martha thought Mary's style of serving was inferior to hers. She didn't realize that in her desire to serve, she was actually neglecting her guest." And then the study Bible goes on to ask, "Are you so busy doing things for Jesus that you're not spending time with him?" In other words, you know, are we not praying the way we should? Are we not trying to draw closer through fasting and day in and day out meditation as we're going about our lives? So doing what is right in serving is just really important. But it can become self-serving also. If we're more focused on what we're doing, which is well-intentioned, and not what God ultimately wants from us, we're maybe needing a little bit of an alignment. Jesus did not blame Martha for being concerned about her household chores. He was only asking her to set her priorities. Service to God can degenerate into mere busy work that is totally devoid of devotion to God. Now, how we choose to spend our time is frequently complicated by, as we've already alluded, Satan's insanity. And he truly is insane. You know, this is insanity. And our own illogical priorities. And once again, the cares of the world, which we can't neglect. The true cares, the important, those cares of the world, which we have to take care of. I'm not talking about, you know, the different levels of cares, the ones we have to take care of. We can't neglect those, but the cares that are optional, are discretion, we have discretion over, we have to look at those priorities. If we don't have those priorities straight, we may actually end up jeopardizing our role in God's work down the line. Is that hobby, that time sink, actually more of an idol? You know, is watching the news for 3 hours a day necessary? Is allowing my mind to wander into, you name it, whatever it is, when we end up going off on these little mental excursions during the day of things that really aren't important, is that going to cause a problem for us down the line? Is it really necessary? And I know, speaking from personal experience, that uncontrolled wanderings is like one of the most useless energy and time sinks that there is. It's like, why am I thinking about that? That is like, I could be thinking about something that could help. And this brings us to the second reason why we might not always be the best stewards of our time: pride and self-sufficiency. So, you know, that pride challenge and our sense of importance is just like a constant, can be a constant challenge. You know, within a discussion concerning covetousness, Jesus spoke a parable that, like all his parables, can be very instructive. If you would turn just a few pages, if you're still in Luke, or quick entry into your mobile device, Luke 12 and beginning of verse 16. Luke 12 and beginning of verse 16. Then he told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, "What should I do? I don't have room for all my crops." Then he said, "I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, 'Friend, or my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Well, but God said to him, "You fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for?" Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. This man failed to consider the uncertainties of life. His pride and sense of self-sufficiency were his downfall. We have no idea how much time we have. No idea at all. God knows. We do not. The Life Application Study Bible comments: the rich man in Jesus' story died before he could begin to use what was stored in his big barns. Planning for retirement, preparing for life before death, is wise. But neglecting life after death is disastrous. You know, part of my hope with this message is, you know, to really get the idea of planning and using time logically. It's not about, the message isn't about planning per se, but it's about time, using time wisely. And using time wisely involves the planning piece. But neglecting life after death is disastrous, because once we go to the grave, as we're clearly told, there's nothing going on. We're just sleeping. So the time is gone at that point. Having wealth was not the fundamental problem here. The use of his wealth and the available time that the wealth afforded was the problem. Eating, drinking, and being merry was not redeeming the time. The currency of life was being squandered. Have you ever noticed that being busy tends to force us to be better time managers? It really does. And I look around, and you know, most of you have children and raised your children or still raising your children. I know just vicariously, that takes a lot of effective time management. You got to make sure that, you know, that Billy is here at such and such a time, and, well, Susie's, you know, she's on an abbreviated schedule at school, so she's going to get out early, and, you know, how are we going to get to the piano lesson? What are we going to do? I can just imagine, but that's all, you know, I'm imagining, but I think it's pretty accurate, that it forces a person to be, you know, good time managers. And God understands this. He wants us to have full, varied, and abundant lives, and he always wants us to look to him for direction. You know, the expression idle hands are the devil's workshop or something along that line. It's really true. When we have a lot, I'm not talking about, you know, respite time, but just when we have a lot of kind of extra time on our hands, that's when we can tend to get important. Where did that come from? Tend to get in trouble. If you would please turn to James. James chapter 4. James chapter 4 and beginning in verse 13 from the New Living Translation again. Look here, you who say, today or tomorrow we are going to a certain town and will stay there a year. We will do business there and make a profit. How do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone. What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. Otherwise, you're boasting about your own pretentious plans, and all such boasting is evil. Remember, it is a sin to know that you ought to do something and not do it. What ends up happening is taking our eyes and our minds off of God and moving ahead without God involved in those plans can end up being problematic big time. Any biblically based discussion of pride and self-sufficiency should also bring us to a mention of the church at Laodicea. If you would please turn to Revelation 3. Revelation 3, beginning in verse 14, where we have, write this letter to the angel of the church in Laodicea. This is the message from the one who is the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of God's new creation. I know all the things you do, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish that you were one or the other. But since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. You say I am rich. I have everything I want. I don't need a thing. And you don't realize that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. That pretty much takes a person down to their basic self. Wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. There's nothing left. So I advise you to buy gold from me, gold that has been purified by fire. Then you will be rich. Also buy white garments from me so you'll not be ashamed by your nakedness, and ointment for your eyes so you'll be able to see. I correct and discipline everyone I love. So be diligent and turn from your indifference. Look, I stand, continuing in verse 20. Look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in, and we will share a meal together as friends. Those who are victorious will sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat with my Father on his throne. You know, I've made this comment a few times. I'll say it again. The thought of Jesus having to stand and knock at doors is really a horrible thought. And this is one of the seven churches. This isn't, you know, this is not just some random person. You know, this is addressed to the church at Laodicea. There should be no doors. We should be one with our Creator and have his mind. The Laodiceans were apparently quite effective in using their time for material pursuits, but they were neglecting God. They did not know God. Their time was misplaced. Then we have reason three, the third reason why we might not always be the best stewards of our time. Discouragement and disengagement. Discouragement and disengagement within our spiritual lives can lead to a tragic misuse of time. If we become discouraged, which I think almost all of us do from time to time, I think I can say that, we tend to disengage when we're discouraged. And in fact, I believe that during the message chat last week, the subject of discouragement had come up. And, you know, a tendency to want to disengage. Discouragement can be fleeting, the result of an acute episode of limited duration and of intense frustration. This type of discouragement comes and goes. Discouragement can also linger and be the result of ongoing and unresolved issues. And this latter type of discouragement may, if left unchecked, become a very serious problem. This discouragement can ultimately lead to a person drifting away from God and his church. In other words, discouragement can be a deal breaker and an eternity ender. Discouragement is a normal part of life within bounds. However, if we do not combat discouragement effectively, discouragement can lead to a disengagement from the faith, as already mentioned. And we are to let no one, and for that matter, no thing, take our crowns. And we need to vigilantly guard against any threat to our future. You know, time can be squandered through discouragement. Because when we're discouraged and our minds are wandering and we become disengaged, that time is lost. And not to say that there isn't a time to be, you know, discouraged, and a time, which we'll get to a little later, for various emotions. Those emotions are naturally in us. It's just managing as well as we're able that time. And valuable time and growth will be lost. That is one very important reason why we're here today, why meeting on the Sabbath is so important. We are able to encourage one another and hopefully help one another to address the discouragement in their lives. God, the ultimate planner and manager of time, knew what we would be confronting and provided required time each week to stay close to him and each other. Paul and Barnabas also knew this. If you would, please turn to Acts 14. Acts 14. Beginning in verse 21 and reading from the New Living Translation again. After preaching the good news in Derbe and making many disciples, Paul and Barnabas returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch of Pisidia, where they strengthened the believers. They encouraged them to continue in the faith, reminding them that we must suffer many hardships to enter the kingdom of God. Strengthening the believers, encouraging them to continue in the faith, and reminding them that this wasn't going to be easy. You know, most of us need to make better use of our time. If you don't, I'm really encouraged by you if you don't, because I hope that's the case. Because I personally need to. And I've made a little bit of progress, but not nearly enough. But I believe that this is the case because of conversations with friends over the years who have said as much themselves and who are making changes and have made changes to be more effective stewards of the time that they have. And this is going to be a problem right down to the coming of you know, God's kingdom. If you would, please turn to Matthew 25. And here we have the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, or as the New Living Translation renders it, the parable of the 10 bridesmaids. So Matthew chapter 25, beginning in verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 bridesmaids who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The 5 who were foolish didn't take enough olive oil for their lamps, but the other 5 were wise enough to take along extra oil. When the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and fell asleep. All became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, they were roused by the shout, "Look, the bridegroom is coming. Come out and meet him." All the bridesmaids got up and prepared their lamps. Then the 5 foolish ones asked the others, "Please give us some of your oil because our lamps are going out." But the others replied, "We don't have enough for all of us. Go to a shop and buy some for yourselves." But while they were gone to buy oil, the bridegroom came. Then those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was locked. Later, when the other 5 bridegrooms returned, they stood outside calling, "Lord, Lord, open the door for us." But he called back, "Believe me, I don't know you. So you too must keep watch, for you do not know the day or hour of my return." Once again, all the bridesmaids became drowsy and fell asleep. All of them. You know, we are the bridesmaids. We need to be the wise bridesmaids and make the best use of our time. It's interesting. When I was going back over this, letting these relatively calm times get by us could prove to be tragic. Well, as I mentioned, the core of this message was originally presented in 2019. I think it was October 26th, if I remember correctly. And October 26th was just as COVID was starting to spread, and things just, what, 3 months later were pretty much making their way. But, you know, even with all the wackiness right now and crazy stuff going on, we're still in a relatively calm time. You know, relatively calm. That could change. You know, and ultimately there is no downside to redeeming the time. We should do it for the church, for our families, for our friends, and for ourselves. But we need to use the time while we're still able to use it. If you would please turn to John 9. John 9. Beginning in verse 1. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. When the times get really tough, really, really, really tough, it's going to be really difficult to catch up. Not impossible, but if, you know, things that we could be working on now, if the time, the priorities are set now, we'll be in a better position. You know, I don't know when Jesus will return. No one does but the Father. But we do know that he will return, and we need to be ready. So this brings us back to the three reasons why we might not always be the best stewards of time. We have life in general, cares of the world, and life, you know, just life in Satan's world. We have pride and self-sufficiency, and we have discouragement and disengagement. God's mercy will never, ever fail, but his patience has its limits. He will always, always be merciful, but there will come a time when the time has come for an acceleration of end time events. And we need to be using our time, the currency of life, very wisely. So how can we do this? One, we can examine our use of time. Every Passover season, you know, we're to follow Paul's instruction in 2 Corinthians to examine ourselves, but we need to be examining ourselves daily. And are we using our time wisely in light of our ultimate responsibilities and the goal of being in the kingdom? Two, we can be planners just as our Father's a planner, not just letting life happen. Much of life will just happen because time and chance happen to us all. But time and chance do not happen to us in the same way that it does for those in the world. God will help us with this. Three, we need to hold ourselves accountable when our planning fails in ways that may have been preventable. And that doesn't mean to go into a deep, dark depression. It just means, you know, I can deal with this. I could have done this a little differently. But what happens is that Satan will we'll work with those times when we're letting ourselves down a bit and really play on our emotions. So we just have to look at it for what it is and keep moving ahead. 4, we need to draw as close as we can to God through prayer, Bible study, fasting, and meditation, and fellowship. And we need to schedule time for all 5, and sometimes it seems like this is nearly impossible. But, you know, God will help us make a way. And 5, need to live for the kingdom and consider that every time something gets in our way, this is just a speed bump. Sometimes those speed bumps are like really big, but it's ultimately a speed bump. So we'll wrap this up, if you would please, by turning to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, reading beginning in verse 1 from the New Living Translation. You know, there truly is a time for everything. Everything. We're just needing to look at how we use our time. Ecclesiastes 3, beginning in verse 1. For everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to harvest, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to turn away, a time to search and a time to quit searching, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be quiet and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. You know, and since all the bridesmaids were drowsy and slept and will be drowsy and sleep, we might also say that there's a time to sleep and a time to wake. As Paul wrote in the 13th chapter of his letter to the Romans, "For you know how late it is. Time is running out. Wake up, for our salvation is nearer now than we first believed. The night is almost gone. The day of salvation will soon be here."